All right, so we are holding on Chof Ches Amar Aleph, sixth line. Okay, we started talking like this. In our Mishnah, we have the whole case where you have a Shulia is born, or a Shulia is born without apparently an accompanying baby, but we said there obviously is a baby, ain't Shulia below Vlad, therefore the house is Tomei. Rav Shimon had disagreed, we said in the end, because of Bittul. Then we started a discussion. Bittul of the baby, the dissolved baby, in all the blood and fluids that come out with it. So now we started talking about, the Shlokish says that suppose you were to take the Shvir, suppose there is an actual beginning to be formed baby over there, which we learned before is definitely Matame. Suppose that now you took it and mixed it up and dissolved it in the water and blood and whatever else that came in, that came out with it, or in water that you're using to clean it up or whatever, then it's considered like meshchinus babel atzerase. Then it's considered like a mess that has disintegrated, and therefore it's not Matame anymore. So Rabbi Yechanan asks Rish Lakish, where are you getting this idea that meshchinus babel atzerase, where are you getting the idea that it's Tavar? No, because Rish Lakish has to be getting it from somewhere. So where is it? So Rabbi Yechanan mentions a din involving a mess that was buried, that was burnt, rather, a mess that was burnt, where we said that the mess is still Matame, and therefore the doors of the house are still Matame. Right. But, and the case over there is Shilde Kayim, and then therefore apparently only when the form of the body is still intact would you say it's Matame. But Rabbi Yechanan says, maybe on the contrary. In any case, it would be Matame. And actually, if the form of it was not recognizable anymore, if the ashes were completely scattered all over the place, then even the smaller doorways of the house would be Tame, because conceivably you could be taking out those ashes through there. That's where we're holding. Amalei Ravina l'Ravashi. So Ravina tells Ravashi. So again, the question is, so Rabbi Yechanan is asking the Shlokish, so where are you getting this din that Meshchin is Babel of Tzorasa Yitzhar? If you're going to say you're learning it from that din, I would disagree, and I would say the inference from that din is not necessarily that it's Tzorah, could be it's still Mechamim. So Amalei Ravina l'Ravashi. Rabbi Yechanan de Omer Kiman, who indeed is Rabbi Yechanan saying like, which kind of... maybe this is starting for Chesamon Aleph, 6-1. So Amar Ravina Ravashi, Rabbi Yechanan, the Amar Kaman, Rabbi Yechanan, who's saying and who wants to say that a mesh in his Babel of Sarasa, this mess that's completely disintegrated and is not recognizable as a mess anymore, Rabbi Yechanan is saying it's Tomei, who is he going like to Rabbi Eliezer? He's going like Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. This man, we learn in a Mishnah in Olive. So that's why I said Rish Lakish is arguing with that. Rish Lakish is going like the Chachamim. Rabbi Yechanan is going like Rabbi Eliezer. Now, the obvious question is, Rabbi Yechanan knows the halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer. Why is the halacha should be like the Chachamim? So why is he choosing Rabbi Eliezer's opinion? So we'll talk about that in a second. But anyway, Ditznan, we learn in a Mishnah. Can
do that?
He can pick one or the other opinion, sure. Doesn't mean the halacha is like it. But
no,
yeah.
He can.
Yeah. Ditznan, we learn in a Mishnah in Aulis, Afer Srufin, the ashes of Mesim that were burnt, Rabbi Eliezer Oy Meshiorin Beroiva, Rabbi Eliezer says that if you have a quarter of a cab of those ashes, then there's still Matami. In other words, if you have a din, for example, but if you have a quarter cab of bones from a mess, they're Matami, everybody agrees to that. So Rabbi Eliezer says that would be the case even if it's turned to ashes. So therefore, Sir Rabbi Yechanan is following that. Now, obviously, a roiva hakav of ashes is not recognizable as a mess. It's a quarter kav, it's a very small amount of ashes relative to the total you get from the whole body. And still, Rabbi Eliezer is saying it's in Tamil. Now, Tosfos discusses over here that maybe Rabbi Yechanan would understand that maybe Rabbi Yechanan would say that the Chachamim disagree in that particular case, but that doesn't necessarily show that in general they hold that Meshchin is Babel of Tzorasa Tahar. They might hold in this particular case. It's in this particular case. It's Matame, but they would say in general it's Tahar, but not in general. In particular, they might not say that would apply to Shvir Shekafur B'meima. Well, in this case, they're arguing with Rabbi Eliezer. They would say Rabbi Eliezer or Meshiur and Beroiva, and the Chachamim are disagreeing. So obviously they're being the Taharit. But nevertheless, the point is that Tosfos says Rabbi Yechanan might say, fine, maybe they would hold in the case where the body was burnt. They wouldn't necessarily apply that to the case of Shvir Shekafur B'meima, which is what Rish Lakish is saying. So Rish Lakish wants to learn a general concept from there that whenever the form of the mess is not recognizable anymore, it's Tahar. So Rabbi Yechanan would say, maybe on that particular detail, the Chachamim do in general agree with Rabbi Yechanan, and on the particular detail where the body was burnt, then they disagree. With that said, though, the Rambam Paskin, maybe not, but at least you don't have to say that Rabbi Yochanan is ignoring the opinion of the Chachamim, because otherwise what's he asking on Rosh Lakish? Rabbi Yochanan knows very well that there's an opinion of the Chachamim against it. With that said, though, the Rambam over here Paskins like Rosh Lakish, that indeed in both cases the mess is Tahar, the Shkir or the mess is Tahar, and the Chesed Mishnah explains, because at least on the surface meaning of it, Rabbi Yochanan is saying his question is only according to Rabbi Yezid. Well, the Halacha is not like Rabbi Yezid. Therefore, the Halacha must be like Rosh Lakish. Because when you have a machloekas, Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, the halacha is going to be like the Chachamim. So even though that goes against the usual rule that a machloekas Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan. But over here, we have to say that because Rabbi Yochanan himself is apparently saying, I want to follow Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Apparently, the Rambam does not accept Tosfos's answers over here about how Rabbi Yochanan could be asking this question even if it's the Chachamim. Okay.
The Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer.
The halacha is like the Chachamim. That's the point. So exactly. So if you say again, Tosfos says that not necessarily is Rabbi Yochanan asking this question only according to Rabbi Eliezer. He's mentioning Rabbi Eliezer because his opinion is more explicit. But he says the Chachamim might agree with the underlying principle of Rabbi Eliezer.
So he's not arguing with the Chachamim, basically.
No, Rabbi Yochanan is an Amor. He can't argue with the Chachamim. He can pick a side. But according to Tosfos, he's not necessarily picking a side. He's mentioning Rabbi Eliezer because his opinion is more explicit, but he would say the Chachamim maybe agree with the underlying principle. The Rambam apparently doesn't know that. Okay. So the question is, how do you have a scenario that we talked about at the beginning where a mess is burnt, but the shildah is still intact? So we said before that Rashi and Tosfos learn that shildah means that the form of the body is still intact. Like all the ashes are still where they were when the body was burnt, and it's still in the shape of a human body. The Rambam here also has a different understanding of it. He understands shildah kayim to mean that the skeleton, or at least the major part of the skeleton, is still intact. Okay, so how do you have that happen? I'm going to buy it just so far. I'll grab a katavla. Rabbi says, let's say, for example, somebody put the mess on a katavla, which is a thick and hard leather covering, and burnt it. So the body burns, and the leather, something like a leather cover. Or shawuk v'kasher, Rashi translates it as leather that's been boiled and it's hard, the ain and the srefis in a mess. So it doesn't burn so easily. You'd need a higher temperature to burn it than you would the mess. So therefore, you can have that the mess is burnt, and because it's lying on the katavla, therefore the form of it is still intact. Tosfos actually says we might even be talking about where the katavla itself has, suppose that it's been made to begin with to have a shape of a person. What do you call it? Suppose it's been made in such a way that it has, to begin with, you know, even before a person lies on it, you have indentations over there that make up the shape of a person. So now when you lay the mess on it and you burn it, then yeah, it's, you know, the ashes aren't going anywhere because they're inside the hollows of it. Okay. Rava almost mentioned so far. Rava says a different answer. You could say that, for example, the mess was burnt on a marble floor.
Pudrim,
well, Rashi translates that pudrim as a marble floor, yeah. So again, and Rashi says, yeah, in both cases, we're talking about that there's a bit of an indentation over there, and there are walls around it, so the ashes don't scatter, they stay where they are. Okay. Ravina almost going to do icharchi achruchi. Ravina gives a third answer that you could say, let's say the mess was not completely burnt to ashes, it was only singed. So now we're talking about, in other words, so the flesh and the bones and whatever of it were burnt enough that they can't really be considered flesh or bones or whatever anymore. They are burnt substance, but they haven't disintegrated completely into ashes. That would be shildei kayim. So you have a machloekas. So you have a machloekas. I probably skim whether Ravina is arguing with Abaye and Rava, or whether he's giving another scenario. Okay. Fine. So that's that. So the bottom line is, again, Rish Lakish says that this case of if the ashes were scattered would be the same as a shvir shetuchu b'meimo, and in both cases they're tahor. Rabbi Yochanan is arguing with the underlying principle. He says not necessarily. And the halacha, again, the Rambam has things like Rish Lakish in this case. Okay. Turn it on bottom. We learn in a blaisa. Amapelas yod chatucha v'rego chatucha, we learned about this previously, if a woman miscarries a fully formed hand, or not fully formed, but whatever, it could be miniature, but a hand that's chatucha, that's defined, that has fingers and all, v'rego chatucha, or But in this case, it means it was just a hand or a foot by itself. So the fact that chachocha, the fact that it's cut off from the rest of the body, is neither here nor there. The point is, chachocha is delineated. It has five fingers or it has five toes. Imot meya leda. So we say the mother is tomei from giving birth. The ein choshishin shem meguf otum bohu. There's no concern that maybe this limb came from a baby that was guf otum, which we learned the other day, that if the baby in the womb was forming as a guf otum, that it was deformed, that it was just forming as a chunk of flesh without any definition as far as the normal shape of the body, we said the mother is not tomei leda because that's not considered a baby. In this case, hypothetically, this hand or foot could have come from a guf otum, and if that's the case, then it
can come from.
Well, in other words, the point is the rest of the body could have been not delineated, and it so happened that this part is. But we're not choshish for that because the very fact that it's completely formed and delineated shows that the rest of the body that it came from was also. Okay. However, Rav Chista and Rav Bar Rav Huna da'ami tavayu, however, Rav Chista and Rav Bar Rav Huna both say, ein noisin lo yimei toiha. That's true. She is tomei for giving birth. However, we don't give her yimei toiha. So we say that she's tomei for 2 weeks, to be on the safe side, because it might have come from a girl. It might have come from a female baby. Therefore, she's tomei for 2 weeks. Normally, we would say that if it's a suffix, whether it was a zocher or an akeva, we would say, as we said before, and as we're going to have in the next Mishnah, that then she has 26 days of yimei tahara after that, where even if she bleeds during that time, she's mutter to her husband, because no matter how you look at it, whether it was a boy or whether it was a girl, either way, she has till the end of 40 days. In this case, Rav Chista and Rav Bar Rav Huna are saying, you don't do that. My timer, why not? The reason is emahil chika leidasa, because we have to be concerned that maybe the actual birth took place long before. Namely like this. Like this, you have one hand or one foot comes out. Where's the rest of the baby? The pashtus is not necessarily still in the womb. It may have come out at some, the pieces of it may have been coming out bit by bit, as we're going to learn in the next Mishnah that you can have, unfortunately, that you can have. A baby starts dissolving and falling apart in the womb, and then it comes out piece by piece. Now, like this, you might have that enough of the baby came out to be considered born long before, and by now all the yimei tahara are finished. So therefore, so you can't assume when this hand or foot comes out, it could be that the rest of the baby came out in a way that was unrecognizable. It could have been, for example, that we didn't notice it with the rest of the shilya. It could have been whatever the scenario is, but we don't know for sure that from now on she has yimei tahara. It's very possible that yimei tahara for the rest of the baby have already passed. And therefore, she has no yimei tahara.
It starts from the.
It starts from when, in the case, and we're going to learn in the next Mishnah that if the baby comes out in pieces, then we say once most of the baby has come out, then it's considered born. So like this, most of it may have come out. As opposed to a regular live birth, then that's what we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah and the Gemara. But yeah. Okay. Most of Rabbi Yosef, the Rabbi Yosef says, have a contradiction. On the next daf, we have a Mishnah that says, I'm a pelas. The any adua mahi pila, if a woman miscarries and we're not sure what it was, whether it was a boy or a girl, patient was also in a keva, then she has to have the yimei tumah for a girl and the remaining yimei tahara for a boy, as is the usual case when there's a suffix. The east talkadai
yimei tumah for a girl.
Well, so you make tumah for a girl, and then the remaining, which is 14 days, and then the remaining yimei tahara that would have been for a boy, which in this case winds up being 26 days.
Right.
Yeah. Now, says Rabbi Yosef, if you're going to tell me that in such scenarios, when you have that there was a miscarriage, then we say that it's also possible that the actual birth of most of the vlad may have come out sometime before. In this case, we don't know what she miscarried, so we don't know whether it was an entire baby or just a piece or whatever. Listni ulanida. Then it should also say that she has to consider herself that there, she's tomei possibly from the birth and also possibly from the nida. Now, as a nida,
we don't do that. Either one.
No. Well, that's the thing. In this case, we don't know. For example, hypothetically, let's say that most of this baby came out a month and a half or 2 months or whatever ago. So you made tumah and you made tahara. Let's say whatever, in the case of a boy 40, in the case of a girl 80, whatever. But let's say it came out a long time ago. Now you have one little bit ends up coming out now, and we're not sure what it was. We don't know whether it's a little bit or whether it's the whole body. So now the din is that the Yemei Tumah and Yemei Tahara that she should have had already took place, which we didn't know that, fine. But now we have, or we did, let's say, well, okay, we know when the previous part was born, but whatever. We don't know whether this is a new baby, whether this is a piece left over from the old baby, whatever. The din is, in that case, in certain cases, which we're going to learn about later on, that we have cases where a woman has a suffix, whether she's a Yeledet or a Nida. And that's relevant as far as that Rashi brings over here a preview of what we're going to learn later on Daf Lamed, that if she has some flows of blood towards the end of the 40 days, then she has a suffix, whether she's a Nida or a Zava or what have you, or whether it's still within the 40 days. So why don't we say that over here? The fact that we don't, says Rabbi Yosef, seems to imply that we're not worried about the Sirchisa Lejasa business. We say all we have to consider is right now she had a baby, right now she had a miscarriage. Was it a boy? Was it a girl? We don't know, but we don't assume that there was Hirshchika Leida, so that there might have been pieces of it coming out previously, and therefore that you may carry our over. The answer is Amar Abaye, Itana Lanida. Yes.
The question is why.
The question is why doesn't it say, the fact that it doesn't say Lanida implies that we don't worry about Hirshchika Leida. The wire of Chista and Rav Bar Avuna telling us that we do. Amar Abaye, Abaye answers though, Itana Lanida. Fine, but if the Mishnah later on mentioned that she has to consider herself possibly Nida as well, have Amina, you would misunderstand that din of to think something else. Mavia Korban Ve'ena Nechel. You would think she does have to bring a Korban to be allowed to ever enter the Beth Mikdash or eat Kodshim again, because she's a Mechusa Kapara after the possible, she's a Suffolk Yeledes, therefore she needs to bring a Korban for the Suffolk. But you would say Ve'ena Nechel, but you wouldn't eat it because of the Suffolk. Therefore, the Mishnah wants to tell us that in this case, no, her korban is eaten. Because no matter how you look at it, whether you say Hirchika Leidasa or not, either way, there's no question there was a baby here at some point. Therefore, there's no question she's bringing a korban and it gets eaten.
Sure.
Well, we know. Well, again, Hamapelos Ve'eni Yadua Mahi Pila. The only concern would be maybe it was a Guf Otum or what have you, but those are rare. So ordinarily, when a woman miscarries, it's an actual baby. It's a Zohar and a Keva, as the case may be.
It's
a Chazaka, basically, right. So if the Mishnah had mentioned Teisha B'Zohar and a Keva or a Nida, then we wouldn't know that it means that her korban is eaten. So like this, the Mishnah leaves out the word Nida to tell us that her korban is eaten. But nevertheless, that doesn't mean that you wouldn't say here's Chikol Leidasa. Yeah, whenever the Kohen meet a Korban, they make a bracha. But that's anyway. The point is that if it was a Suffolk, and as we've learned many times before, on a Suffolk, the Suffolk chatos, the Kohen can't eat it. Suffolk chatos, the oichabal of Suffolk, the Kohen can't eat it. Because if it wasn't needed to be brought as a chatos, then it's kolin bazara and it's nezela because it was killed with melita rather than shita. So yeah. Therefore, so Abaya says, you, Rabbi Yosef, are assuming that the Mishnah doesn't say over Nidya because it argues with Rav Chista and Rav Bar Avuna's point. No, it agrees with them. It's not mentioning the Nidya because of a side issue, because it wants us to be clear on what happens with her korban. That the korban is offered and that the kohenim can eat it.
So she could be a Nidya.
So, right. So we do say she is possibly a Nida now after this last thing that came out.
She could be.
We don't know whether the whole baby came out or not.
Still.
But so therefore, nevertheless though, even if she's a Nida now, she was definitely a Yeledes at some point. Even if we assume she was a Nida now, because all that came out now was a hand or a foot, the rest of the baby, she's definitely a Yeledes, because, and no matter what, either she was a Yeledes at some previous time, or she was a Yeledes now.
Right.
So therefore, no, one way or the other, a Korban is born.
Right.
Okay.
So it has nothing to do with Machlokes, really.
No, so therefore, so there's sort of Chista, and Rav Bar Avuna's point is not contradicted by the Mishnah, and the Halacha isn't that way. Okay. Amar Avuna, hoitzi over, kamash malon denechoy. Amar Avuna, hoitzi over as yodei v'hazira. Rav Avuna says, what happens if, let's talk about now a regular live birth. If the baby sticks out its hand from the womb, v'hazira, and then he brings it back in, imay tmei aleida. As soon as he sticks out his hand, the mother is tomei from birth.
Yeah.
It says in the pasuk by Tamar when she's having the twins, Peres and Zerach, by he belidta by Yitanya. The pasuk says when she was giving birth, belidta means when she gave birth, as she was giving birth. But that's the point. By Yitanya, one of the twins that was in her womb stuck out his hand. The pasuk says midwife put a crimson thread on it, and afterwards that kid was named Zerach. Anyway, the fact that the pasuk uses the word belidta for it implies that even once only a hand comes out, then it's going to already considered a birth, right? Yeah, by the way, Macholikus Rishonim over here, the Rashba the Rashba wrote a sefer on the halachas, on a number of halachas that are necessary for the house, including Taras Mishpacha and Kashrus and whatever, and called it Torah Habayis. The Ra'ah, who was another great Rishon who lived in the same place, wrote, and at the same time, a contemporary of his, wrote a sefer criticizing a number of the Rashba's conclusions in the sefer, and called it Bedek HaBayis, which means like the cracks and the flaws in the house. And the Rashba, in turn, wrote a sefer called Mishmeres HaBayis, the guarding of the house, to defend his position. Actually, the funny thing about it is the Rashba wrote that sefer Mishmeres HaBayis anonymously. He didn't, maybe,
everybody knew it.
But not everybody knew. In one place in his Shilas the Trumas, in one place in one of his Trumas, the Rashba apparently slipped and forgot that he wanted to keep it a secret, I guess. And he writes, as I wrote Mishmeres HaBayis, so that gave away the secret. Yeah. Okay, anyway. So the Rashba in Tertus HaBayis learned that this din would apply only if it's a hand. So that's all the Gemara is talking about. The Ra'ah, yeah, the Ra'ah argues with that and says no, it would apply to a foot as well.
Yad can be a foot.
Yeah, but he says that once we're saying a limb, there's no reason to limit. Okay. Most of Rabbi Yehuda says, what do you mean? I have a contradiction. Brisa says, Hoitzi uberes yadoi, if the uber sticks out his hand, ein imri cheshesh lachol dover. The mother doesn't have to be concerned about anything. She's not tummy yet. So what do you mean she's already tummy from the birth?
Where did you get that from?
Well, it's a Brisa. Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman says, Rav Huna personally explained it to me. What it means is actually lachosh cheshesh. As far as being concerned that she might be tummy from the birth, that she has to be concerned of. So now at this point, for example, she can't eat truma or kudshim or whatever. You may tell her, lo yavin and lo adin nafik rube. But as far as when do we count, you may tell her from only from when most of the baby comes out. So in other words, if the baby stuck out its hand on Sunday and then put it back in.
And then the next day,
most of the baby came out on Monday. Then we would say, when did you make it? Suppose that it turns out to be a boy. So now she has, instead of 7 Yemei Tumah that she would normally have, she has 8, or she has 1 that's a Sopik beginning on Sunday. He put his hand out on Sunday, one day before, and then they put it back in, and then the next day he was born, yeah. So then we would say that she's Tumah for 1 day Mitzopik, and then 7 days, 1 day Mitzopik for the hand, and then 7 days for the whole baby, and then only after that can the Yemei Tumah begin.
Okay. Well, you may
tell
her, or you may
tell her. You may tell
her
as usual.
Why?
I don't know. She's not completely tell her. She's still not allowed to eat truma and kodshim during that time. She's tell her in the sense that she's mutter to her husband even if she's bleeding. Right. So what do you mean? What do you mean? The Braisa says his mother doesn't have to be concerned about anything. What are you telling me? She has to be concerned. That's exactly the opposite of what the Braisa says. The Braisa said, Ein imi chesheshes l'chol dover. So she doesn't have to be concerned about anything. What are you telling me she has to be concerned? Sure, but what it means is, midaraisa, she doesn't have to be concerned. Av midrabanan chesheshes, but midrabanan, maybe we consider it a burden. The question is,
what would midrabanan do that?
They had reason to say maybe it might be confused with a regular birth. Actually, the Ritva wants to say, after all, I mean, so why didn't the Braisa specify and say Cheshesh and Ein Cheshesh Midar Raisa or words to that effect? So the Ritva wants to say that maybe this is a Xera that was made by the Chacham in the times of the Gemara. So therefore, in the times when the Braisa was composed, it didn't exist yet. Okay. So the question is, what do you mean? We have a Pasuk by Hebrew Ritva. The answer is Midrabanan across Machta Ba'alma. The whole concept is only Midrabanan, which is possibly tell me later from the hand. They use the pasuk in a venas master as the ritva writes in the Sefer Rosh Hashanah, and we quoted before that when the Gemara says that something is an asmachta, means Hashem put that pasuk in the Torah as something that the Hashem put it there in order for the Chachamim, if they feel it's necessary to make such a gzera, to have this pasuk as a support for it.
Conclusion.
So that's it. So therefore, once the hand comes out, then she's possibly so that she has to be choshesh, and then she's considered a leda, and she's considered a yoledes as far as truma. But as far as you may tell her, she has to wait till and count at only after 7 or 14 days from the actual birth. Mishnah says, "Am a pelus tumtum v'androgynous." If a woman miscarries a tumtum or an androgynous, and we know what they are, a tumtum has no visible genitalia, and an androgynous who has both. So then she has to have the hybrid Yemei Tumah Batara, the Yemei Tumah for a girl 14 and 26, right? Tumtum Vazachar, what happens if she has twins, one's a tumtum and one's a male, or androgynous Vazachar, or an androgynous and a male, also Keshav Vazachar within a Keva, because the tumtum might be a female, and then you have a male or a female.
Tumtum is not a female.
It might be. We're going to discuss. Hold on. We're going to discuss in the Gemara. But what a big point we're going to be discussing in the Gemara is whether we consider a tumtum or androgynous to be a sophic zocher, sophic makeva, or do we consider them basically a third gender, neither male nor female? That's what we're going to take that up in the Gemara. But wait, okay. So therefore, right now we're saying that if you have a tumtum and a male, or an androgynous and a male, the tumtum might be. No, that's the point. In other words, it might be considered a female. We don't know what's under that one.
If with it is a male.
That's the point. In other words, what we're saying is that then we don't know. We know for sure we have a boy here. We don't know whether we have another boy here or whether we have a girl here.
Yeah.
Therefore, she has the same suffix, 14 and 26.
Right.
Rather than if we knew that they were both boys, it would be 7 and 33. And the same thing, on the other hand, a tumtum and a keva, androgynous and a keva. But if you have a tumtum plus a female or an androgynous plus a female, no problem. Teshuv and a keva, blah, blah. Then she just has the definite days for a female, 14 and 66, because no matter how you look at it, even if the tumtum or the androgynous is considered a male, it doesn't matter. Because then once you have a male and a female, then it's the females, the days that take precedence. Because her days include the days of the Zohar, right? Okay. Yotzim chutach or mesoras, continues the Mishnah, if the baby comes out in pieces, or it comes out backward, the breech birth. Mesoras means, Rashi explains, k'mesoras amikru v'darshayu, like the expression that the Gemara has in some places, rearrange the words in the pasuk in order to darshan it. So the word mesoras over here means out of order, meaning in other words, like normally a baby comes out head first, in this case it's coming out feet first. So then Mishiyetz. Once most of the baby comes out, then it's considered born. On the other hand, if the baby comes out the normal direction, head first, then once most of the head has come out, then the baby is considered born. What is the modus considered most of the head for that purpose? Means once his forehead comes out. His forehead. Once that comes out, then that's already considered, then he's considered that he's born.
So it's very different to the previous case.
Exactly, because there it was feet first. There it was feet first, or the baby was what came out in pieces, and then we say we need to write that. So the Gemara asks, "Hatch the tumtum lechode v'androgynous lechode, omer teshel lezachar v'lemekeva." We said in the Mishnah that even if the woman has only a tumtum by itself, or only an androgynous, it's a single birth.
Hashta
means let's consider.
Okay.
Hashta means now. Okay. So hashta now meaning is let's consider. The Mishnah has told us already that tumtum lechode v'androgynous lechode, that if a tumtum is born in a single birth or an androgynous is born in a single birth, omer teshel lezachar v'lemekeva, then we're saying she has to have the suffix, and therefore she has 14 and 26. The hybrid days, tumtum bezocha, androgynous bezocha, meboya. Then what's the chiddush if she has the tumtum together with a boy, or the androgynous together with a boy? We should be able to understand that alone, if the din is the same way. Because the tumtum and the androgynous, the whole point, we're saying there's sophic zocha, sophic mekeva. So what does it matter whether there's a boy, whether there's a twin boy born with them or not? Why does the Mishnah have to mention that case? The answer is itzrich, we need it. For a reason that we mentioned the same concept the other day, Mao Detema, you would think otherwise you might have thought, since Rabbi Yitzchak said, as we said before, Isha Mazras Tchila Yelena Sachar, if the woman emits seed first, then she's going to give birth to a boy. Isha Mazras Tchila Yelena Sachar, and if a man gives seed first, then she's going to give birth to a female. As we discussed the other day, a few possibilities what that means. So therefore, Ema, okay, but whatever, the Gemara is taking that as a given. Therefore, Ema midahai zocher, hai nami zocher. So therefore, you would have more reason to think, Mela, if the tumtum was born by itself, you would say, okay, it's a 50-50 chance, if it's a boy or girl.
Right.
But now, if it's born together with a male twin, you would say, well, if one of them is a boy, there's a much higher likelihood that this one was a boy also, because the pastures, they both came from the same fertilization. We don't know for sure, but we would assume. Therefore, Ema, you would think, you would have thought, if the Mishnah hadn't told us, that maybe once one of them is known to be a boy, maybe we have a higher likelihood to think that the other one is. Therefore, she shouldn't have to be Teshuv L'Zachar without a Keva. She should just be able to have the 7 and 33. Kamash Malan. That is why the Mishnah has to tell us that not. Because Ema, Shnei Mizur, B'Vatachas, L'Zachar, B'Zun, a Keva. It could very well be that both of them emitted seed at the same time. Therefore, the result is, in other words, you have two fertilized eggs. One became a boy, one became a girl. therefore it's a suffix. So in other words, that's the point. So therefore, we have the same suffix that we would have if it was a single birth. We have the same suffix if it was a twin birth. Okay. Amar of Nachman Amar Rav. So now let's talk more generally about a tumtum and androgynous. And actually, this is it's interesting. You know, we talk about tumtum and androgynous throughout Shas. This over here, Dafka, you know, we're almost at the end of Shas. This sugya over here is one of the main places where the Gemara talks about certain basic dinim, certain basic definitions. What is a tumtum or an androgynous? You know, are they considered suffix zacha, suffix mekeva, or are they considered a third gender? Okay. So, Amr of Nachman Amr Rav. Tumtum or androgynous shiro loiven oy oydin. If a tumtum or androgynous, now we know like this. A man becomes tome when loiven, white liquid, comes out of his body, out of his organ. Either it can be regular white, in which case it's shichas there, and he's a balkeri, or it's off-white, and then he's a zav. And a woman becomes tome as a nidder or a zava when red liquid comes out of her, as we learned before, either the four or five shades, the five shades that make her tome, more red or derivative. Right. So now what happens at tumtum v'androgynous, shiro loiven oy oydim, suppose that they have a white discharge or red discharge. Now it's a suffix, because is this person a boy, or is he a man, or is he a woman? If he's a man, then he's tomei from loiven. If it's a woman, he's tomei from oydim. So if they had one or the other, ein chayav al bias mikdash, they're not going to be chayav a korban if they entered the bias mikdash after that, because they might actually be tahor. Suppose it happens. We know that if a person enters the bias mikdash when they're tomei, we know you have actually the case where the person brings a korban is specifically, we learned way back in Shavuot, is there has to be yediyah b'tchilah, the yediyah b'soif, the helam in time. They knew to begin with that they're tameh and that this is the bais mikdash. Then they forgot that they're tameh here, that this is the bais mikdash, and they went in, and later on they realized. So in this case, Rav is telling us, suppose that this tumtum had a white discharge. So he knew at the time he had a white discharge, and he suffered suddenly. Then he went into the bais mikdash, having forgotten that. Then later on he remembers he's not going to bring a korban, because it's only a suffix, whether he's tameh. And the same thing if there was oydim, if there was red liquid. The ain surf malayim at a truma, and if they were to touch truma in that condition, you wouldn't burn truma for the same reason. It's not necessarily definitely tummy, it's only sophist tummy. And sophist, we leave it aside until either if it's dough, then air paste that we're going to burn it. If it's any other kind of truma, we wait, and if it's any other kind of truma, we wait till it spoils or becomes definitely tummy or whatever, and then we burn it, on the other hand, he continues, ro loiven ba'odim ke'echad. On the other hand, suppose the person has both a white discharge and a red discharge. Now you have, no matter how you look at it, they're tummy. Whether you consider them a man or a woman. Well, you have, let's say, right, white, and then right afterwards red, or vice versa.
In the previous case,
it was one or the other. Here's both. Then, still, Rav says, ein chayav al bias mikdash. Still, they're not going to be chayav a korban for entering the bias mikdash when they're tamei, for reasons that the Gemara is going to discuss soon. Avol surfim alayim as a truma, but we do burn truma if they touch it, because the truma, there's no question, it's tamei. Now, why shouldn't they burn a korban if they enter the bias mikdash in that condition? Shenema, because the pasuk says, mi zocher v'ad nekeva t'shalechu. The pasuk says, you have a mitzvah that tmeim have to be sent out of the various machnas. Certain tmeim are not allowed inside the azara. Certain ones are not even allowed in the Harabayis. Certain ones are not allowed in Yerushalayim as a whole. But the Pasuk uses the expression, Mizachar ad nekeva t'shalechu. From male to female, you should send away. That's the mitzvah tasei, to stay out of the mitzvah when you're talking. Therefore, that means Zachar vadei nekeva vadei. So it only applies if it's a definite male to a definite female. The lo tumtum v'androgynous. So it wouldn't apply to a tumtum v'androgynous because they're not definitely Zachar or definitely Sophic. They're not definitely Zachar or definitely nekeva. Therefore, the Pasuk is excluding them. Now, Tosfos gets into a long discussion over here based on various other Gemaras, whether in, you know, over here on the face of it, we're saying.
That's fine.
It's a Vaday that's Tomei. But in this case, you have a mute in the Pasuk that says that nevertheless, their tuma is they have a mitzvah to stay out of this mitzvah in this condition, fine. But you can't say that they're actually violating this mitzvah sase by doing that, and therefore you can't say they should bring a korban for it.
And yet we make them burn.
We make them burn the truma, because the truma is tomei no matter how you look at it. But the pasuk is not just telling us that anybody who's tomei who enters the bais mikdash brings a korban. It's using the expression mizachar v'ad
nekeva. And here we don't have
it. And here it's not. It's neither a zachar. Right. But that's like I said. I know what Alex chose to get into a long discussion over here about the pros and cons of whether we say that a tumtum and androgynous are a sophic, or whether we say that they're a third gender. But Well,
staying with it without the third agenda, but if that's the case, we shouldn't still have them burn the
truma. The truma is a separate thing. There's no pocket that says mizocha ad nekeva when it comes to truma. Anybody, if truma becomes tome, you burn it, period. So here, we know for a fact the person is tome because they have loivan and oidan. But when it comes to tumas mikdash, there's a special pocket, the word mizocha ad nekeva, that teaches us that even though, yes, they were tome and they did enter the bit mikdash, and there's no question they were tome at the time, nevertheless, mizocha ad nekeva tells us that they're not bringing a korban.
In the first case,
if it was either white or red, then there's no chiddush in it. Of course, it's a suffix. You don't bring the korban.
We don't burn.
Well, you don't burn the truma in that case. Because it's a suffix, whether they're tamei or not. Is this a man, and then he's tamei from loven, but he's not tamei from oidim, or is it a woman, and vice versa?
And if it's a woman, she's tamei from.
If it's a woman, only with a red discharge. Yeah. If it's a man, only with a white discharge. The question is lema messiah. Okay, can we say that we can support what Rav is saying on the basis of a brisa that says it seems to say the same thing? Tumtum androgynous ro loivan oyoidem. If a tumtum or an androgynous have a white discharge or a red discharge, ein chayavan al bet mikdash, they're not chay of kares or korban for entering the bet mikdash when they're tamei. The ein sofen alein as a truma, and you don't burn truma that they touch because it's only a suffix. Ro loivan oyoidem kahas. But if they had a white discharge and a red discharge, one after the other, in chayavan al bias mikdash, so they're not chayav for entering the bias mikdash, I will surf and alayim asa truma, but you do burn truma that they touch, because it's definitely tamei. So, now, the braita doesn't give a reason. Rav gave the reason that it's based on the pasuk mizachar ad nekeva. So we should assume, my timer, shouldn't we assume, why is the braita saying that the din is the same exact din as Rav said, my timer, what would be the reason behind the braita? Lav mishum shenema mizachar ad nekeva tashalechu zachar vader mekeva vadoiz lechum to vandroganus. Wouldn't it be for the same reason that Rav mentioned? So in that case, then the braita clearly supports what Rav said. However, the Gemara says, Amar Ula loy, Ula says, not necessarily is this braisa a support for Rav, because Hamani Rabbi Eliezer, because you could say that this braisa goes according to Rabbi Eliezer, and it has nothing to do with the special pasuk Mizachar and Mekeva, but it's based on a shita of Rabbi Eliezer that more generally as far as the whole matter of Tumas Mikdash Rekodesh. Now, we learned in Masechta Shavuos this whole concept of Tumas Mikdash Rekodesh. We said there that if you have, you need Yediyah Betchila, the person knew that he was Tomei and knew that this is the Bet Mikdash, or these are Kodeshim. Then he forgot, and he entered the Bet Mikdash, or ate the Kodeshim. Then he remembered afterwards, so that's when he's bringing the Korban or the Beyared. Now, the Chachamim over there say that it doesn't matter so what is it that he could have forgotten between? What was the Harem Ben Tayyim? One possibility is he remembered that he was Tomei, but he forgot that this is the Bet Mikdash. The other possibility, he didn't know that this particular area that he's entering is part of the Bet Mikdash. The other possibility is that the other way around, he knew that this is the precincts of the Bet Mikdash, but he forgot that he was Tomei. The Chachamim hold, and this is the Halacha, that either way he's going to bring the Korban over the Yoreh. But we learn in a Mishnah in Shavuos, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, when the Pasuk says, Hasheret Senela Mimenu, the Pasuk mentions the case where a person touched a dead Sheret, and then it continues, Venela Mimenu, and he forgot it. So Rabbi Eliezer learns from the fact that it says, Hasheret, next to the word Venela Mimenu, means, Al Helam Sheret Huchayev, Ve'en Chayev Al Helam Mikdash. Rabbi Eliezer would hold, when is he bringing the Korban? Only if he forgot that he had touched the Sheret. But if he remembered that he had touched the sheret in his tummy, and the only thing he forgot is he forgot that this is part of the mikdash, then Rabbi Eliezer says he would not be bringing the korban.
So it doesn't go.
So one second. So in other words, again, the chachamim over there say that whether there's halam tuma or halam mikdash, either way is enough to right. And obviously, right. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, not. According to Rabbi Eliezer, not. According to Rabbi Eliezer, only if there was halam tuma, not if there was halam mikdash. And the Mishnah continues there. Rabbi Akiva learns differently. He says, the Pasuk says, and then it continues, it is hidden from him and he is Tomei. So Rabbi Akiva is also learning from the juxtaposition of the words in the Pasuk, that he's only chayiv if he forgot that he was Tomei, he's not chayiv the korban if he forgot that this is the Bet Mikdash. And there, Amrina, now on the face of it, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva seem to be saying the same thing. What's the nafkamina between them? The Amrinan, so we explain in the Gemara there, my Benai, what's an actual Nachmina between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, how they learn the Din. So Chizkiah says, the Nachamin is, let's say the person is not sure what he became Tomei from. So, for example, he had a Sheretz and a Nevela in front of him. He touched one of them. He's not sure which one. But now, so now what happens? So he knows he's definitely Tomei, but he's not sure from what. Then he forgot that he's Tomei and entered the Beis Hamikdash. And now later on, he remembered that he's Tomei from something. He still doesn't know what the something was, but he knows that he had been Tomei. Now, there you have a Nachamina. Rabbi Eliezer says, since we're learning from the words Hasheretz v'nela mimenu, that means in an adiyoda, either Sheretz itmi, even Nevela itmi. It has to be, in order for him to bring a korban, he has to know which one. Was it a Sheretz or was it a Nevela? So therefore, in this case, where he knows that it was one of them, but he doesn't know which one, then he's not bringing the carbon. But, we don't need that. As long as he knows that he was Tomei, we don't care. In that particular detail, the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, by the way. In that particular detail, that it doesn't matter whether he knew of the trauma, whether he knew the particular source of trauma, as long as he knew that he was Tomei. As far as the larger machlokas, whether Helam Mikdash would make him chayim, that's a different machlokas. There, the halacha is like a machlokas. Anyway, the point is that so we see from that. So lav Amar Rabbi Eliezer Hasan. So what are we saying? Isn't it true that Rabbi Eliezer is saying over there? But in the yada either sheret itmi even the bela itmi, he has to know in order to be chayiv in the korban. He has to have known to begin with whether he became tamei from the sheret or from the nevela. Otherwise, just the fact that he knows he was tamei is not enough to make him bring a korban. Hachinami, the same thing over here. But in the yada either loyven itmi even oidem itmi. The same way over here, we could argue the brisa that we quoted, which we wanted to bring as a proof for Rab, maybe it's going according to Rabbi Eliezer. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, you have to know what the actual trauma was. In this case, he has to know, am I Tomei as a Balkeri because of the white discharge, because I'm a man, or am I Tomei from the red discharge because I'm a woman, and therefore I'm Tomei as a Nidur or a Zava, and he doesn't know. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, no carbon. So not necessarily. Is that Braisa following Rab's point, which would be that even leaving that point aside, even if we say like Rav Akiva and the Chachamim, that it doesn't matter whether he knows the source of Tumah, but in this case, you have the special thing, Mizachar ad Nekeva, and a Tumtum or Androgynous is neither a Zachar nor a Nekeva. So not necessarily is the Braisa coming at it from the same perspective as Rab. The Braisa might be only because of Rabbi Eliezer's Shita, in general, about Tumas Mikdash for culture, whereas Rab's din is specific to the case of a Tumtum of Androgynous. Tosfos points out, by the way, there's Gemaras elsewhere that say that Rabbi Eliezer considers an androgynous to be a definite male. However, the Gemara there explains that Rabbi Eliezer doesn't say for all purposes, he just says for purposes of the dinim of Mishkav Zohar, for if another man would have it. So we're not talking about that, so therefore it's not relevant. Also, Tosfos says maybe what it means is the Tana of this Braisa agrees with Rabbi Eliezer's din as far as Tumas Mikdash for Kovchev, but disagrees with him on the larger question of whether an androgynous is a male or not. Okay. Anyway. So the Braisa could be like that. Avol or Rabbi Akiva, Da'am Mishum Tumma Mishayev, but Rabbi Akiva, who says it doesn't matter, as long as he knows that he is Tomei, then he's Chayev regardless, Hochanami, then maybe over here the Braisa would disagree with that and say Mishum Tumma Mishayev. He's Chayev just on the ground that he knows that he's Tomei. It doesn't matter whether he knows it's because of the Loven or because of the Oidem. Whereas Rav would be taking a different tack and saying that in the case of Tumma Vandraganus, it's excluded by Mizachar and Mikhail.
He has to know
whether he's a Zohar or not. We have to know whether he's a Zohar or not, whether he's in a Keva, and we don't. Okay. So no proof from that Braisa for Rav. Okay. So the question is, and I guess this is your question before, Maishna Bias Mikdash Deloy, so why are you telling me that in the case where he enters the Bias Mikdash, B'shoigig, he's not bringing a korban, the reason is, Dichtiv Mizachar V'ad Mekeva T'shalechu, you're saying because the Pasuk tells us Mizachar V'ad Mekeva, which means it only applies, this din only applies to a Zachar or a Mekeva, but not anybody else. Well, then in that case, which means Zachar V'ad in the Mekeva V'adoy, so it's Chumtum Androgynous, E'hochi, by that logical, so I have a Pasuk, that no, not just the logic. If we just went by logic, but we have a positive. Right, so the logic, fine. You take Vadei Tomei and right. We have a right. But here we can actually find a positive that Ehoch, it's Truma Nami Lo Nisuit. We shouldn't be burning Truma because of it either, because we have a different positive. We have a positive, the last positive of Parashat Mitzvah. says v'hazov es zoyve lazochav lamekeva, says that somebody who is a zov, whether male or female, a zov or a zov, meaning again zochav ad in a keva v'adoris v'lechum to v'androgynous. So in that case, then, so that pasuk, the pasuk says, no, well, it's true that a zov has to bring a korban if he had shalosh ruyos,
right.
But so that's not the pasuk is just the pasuk on the surface, the pasuk is just summarizing zoyz tarda v'zov v'asher ketein menu shepanzera v'adov v'nidasa v'zov v'zov. On the face of it, the pasuk is just summarizing and saying these are all the dinim for these various kinds of people who are discharging. But the fact that it says v'zov v'zov v'lazocher v'lakeva, we should also learn from that it means only if it's a definite zocher, only if it's a definite nekeva. A tumtum v'androgin, if I'm not a definite zocher and definite nekeva, or they're either a suffix or a third gender, as the case may be, and therefore it shouldn't apply. The answer is, so it should be also, zocher v'adin nekeva v'adoris v'le tumtum v'androgin. The answer is no. Ha'humi boile l'chidr of Yitzchak. No, because that pasuk, la zocher v'la nekeva, over there, we need that for a different din. We need that to teach us a different din. The din that Rabbi Yitzchak said, the Rabbi Yitzchak, la zocher le rabbi to some third of my noisav, the lana keva le rabbi to some teras the my noisav. What it is like this. The pasuk goes like this. Vazovas the pasuk mentions vazovas zove la zocher the lana keva, and also this is then and also you have earlier in that parasha it mentions the mitzvah. And therefore, in other words, the pasuk is telling us that the dinim of a zov or a zava to a certain extent also apply to a male or female maserda. L'rabbis is a maserda, l'zocher l'rabbis is a maserda l'mayin noisav. It teaches us, just like with a zov, as we've learned before, the saliva of a zov, the urine of a zov, etc., are an avatroma. It's called mayonis. It means like the fountains, like the fountains, right? The sources, right? So therefore, his shechazera, his urine, his saliva, whatever. Anyway, arm the tamet. No, we said three. We said there's three, and then there's another three that are addition, whatever. Yeah. So the same way as a zov's saliva, etc., are an avatoma, the same way a mitzvah's saliva is an avatoma, and the same way as a zov's saliva, female zov, her saliva is an avatoma. The same thing is also true of a mitzvah, the woman who has tzaras. So that's what we're learning from the word vazocha v'la keva over there. That
not what we want.
Not
to
that
say.
We said that it excludes the tumtum v'androgynous.
One, you cannot apply to the other.
Yeah, because if you can only learn one thing from a pasuk, unless you find that there's something extra in the pasuk on top of that, if you find that there's other words or letters or whatever in the pasuk, then fine. But we don't have that. The question is, hi nami mi boile. What do you mean? Actually, we can't even learn that din from it because hi nami. This also, yeah, mi boile. The pasuk is needed. That pasuk is needed. The mishi yesh le tara b'mikvah to teach us that. No, sorry. Hi nami goes back to we said mi zocher ad mikveh in connection with the pasuk that says that you have to send out tmeim from the bit mikvah, or from the various zones where they're not allowed to be. So you're telling me we're saying like this again. You have two places where the Torah says zocher and mikveh. Two places for our purposes where the Torah mentions zocher and mikveh. One is in Parshas Bamidbar about Shiluach Tmeim, and one is in Parshas Mitzvah about the Tumah of a Zov and a Zov on a Mitzvah. So you're telling me like this, that you're telling me the words La Zohar V'la Nekeva in connection with the Zov and the Zovah are not meant to teach us that a Tumtum who's a Zov or an Androgynous who's a Zov is not Mitameh. They are Mitameh. We're learning something different from the Zohar and the Nekeva over there. We're learning that it includes also a Mitzvah and a Mitzvah. So now the question is, let's go back to the pasuk mizachar ad mekeva tashalechu. You're assuming, all this time, we've been assuming, and Rav has been telling us, that the words mizachar ad mekeva mean only males or females, but not tumtum and redness, but hai nami, this also, that pasuk also, mi boile, we need it to teach us a different thing. The words mizachar ad mekeva are not excluding the tumtum and redness. Instead, they're teaching us the mishi yesh le tara mitzvah. This mitzvah of sending tmeim outside of the bet mikdash or whatever only applies to things or people that are able to be tohor in a mikveh, prat l'klei cheres, meaning as opposed to earthenware, which is tameh, divrei Rabbi Yosi, so says Rabbi Yosi, and apparently nobody disagrees with him. So therefore, in other words, the pasuk is telling him, by saying mizachar ad mekeva, the pasuk means anything that when it becomes tameh, you can dip it in a mikveh and it becomes tahor. That's the kind of thing where if it's tameh, you have to remove it from the azara, but not klei cheres, and also not, for example, food. So that's what we're looking. That's what we're going to discuss then. And divrei Rabbi Yosi, so on the face of it, therefore, so those words, mizachar ad mekeva, are meant to teach us that, are teaching us that people and metal containers and other such things that are Tomei have to be removed from the Azara. Nothing about Tum Tumah.
Metal is not the Zohar and the Keva.
Okay, but nevertheless, it still is like a Zohar and a Keva in that it can be dipped in the mikveh and become Zohar. Also, Tosfos points out another detail over here. Also, Klei Cheres are also unlike people in that they can never become an Ava Tumah as opposed to metal and other Kalim could. Okay, anyway. So the answer is, Imkein Nichtav Rachmana Odom. If that's all the Torah wanted to tell us, that you should know this din of Shiluach Tmeim doesn't apply only to people, it applies also to metal kalim, then it could have just said Adam. It could have said Adam to Shalechu, and we would understand therefore instead of saying Zohar and the Keva.
We eschewed that interpretation, that was.
Well, so in other words, what we're saying is we can learn both. We can learn that it does apply to kalim as well, but we can also learn because instead of saying Adam, it says instead it said Zohar and the Keva, then therefore it also teaches us that the Tum Tum and Andrew are going to sort of exclude.
So it's inclusive rather than exclusive.
Well, so one is.
One is for Tum Tum and
Andrew. To exclude them.
To exclude.
And the other one is to include Klemachet. The chi tema. Now you might argue, e kosa rachmana adam hava amin of klei machas loy. Now you could argue, how does that help? And if it said only adam, how would we even know that it includes metal kalim as well? That we could say mikol tomei lanefesh nasa. We could learn that from the fact that the pasuk continues kol tomei lanefesh. Anything that is tomei from a dead body, which therefore includes klei machas, that can become tomei from a dead body. You know, the whole pasuk goes like. Sabbath for Israel, the Shalchum and Amachna command the Jewish people they should send out of the Machna, called Tzoruah, anybody with Tzoras, the whole Zob, any Zob, the Chol Tomei Lanofesh, anybody who's Tomei by a dead body. Then the next part of the community is Mizachar and the Kevet Shalechu, from male to female you should send away. So now what's the Gemara saying? That's the point. That's what we're discussing now. That's the point. No, Kol Tomei Lanofesh doesn't mean a Nefesh. It means anything that became Tomei from a dead body. In other words,
whether a person or a Kevet.
Well, that's the point. So that's the point, in other words. So the Pasuk could have told us, v'chol tomei lanofesh, which therefore would include kalim as well as people. Then it would continue odem to shalechu, and therefore it would include all people, whether they're tum tum androgynous or whether they're not, because it says, v'zachar ad mekev, and that means we're excluding them from this category. Okay. So therefore, zachar and mekev alamali, once we have kol tomei lanofesh, then it doesn't need to say zachar and mekev, it could just say odem. Then it must teach us Rav Din that a Tum Tum and Andrew are going to throw excluded. Okay, so the question is the Emakule Lichid Rav Udasa. Okay, maybe the whole thing is only teaching us Rav Din. Where are we seeing, after all, that it includes Kalim?
Right.
The answer is in Kain Nichtiv Zohar Unakeva. Fine, but if that's the case, the Posit could have just said, no, the Posit could, forget about that, but within Zohar Adnakeva, it doesn't have to say Mizohar Adnakeva, from male to female. It just says Zohar Unakeva, male or female. And then it would mean not Tum Tum Andrew. My mizachar v'ad mekeva. What do you mean from zachar until mekeva? What's in between? What's in between zachar and mekeva, so to speak? Means ad kol davar. Means ad kol davar. Sheyesh leitad of a mikvah. It's extended to include anything which, like a zachar and a mekeva, meaning can be dipped in a mikvah and become zachar, including metal and other kalim. Yeah. Not klei cheres, right? Because klei cheres can't be dipped in a mikvah, right? Tosfos points out, by the way, the reason why the Gemara is using the expression clay maskos over here. I mean, the same din you could say as far as wooden kalim, and the same thing would apply to wooden kalim, same thing would apply to clothing. Wooden kalim, yeah, that can become, as long as they have a clay kibble, as long as they have a kibble. But yeah, anyway, Tosfos says the reason why is, I'm mentioning clay maskos because they have a special chumra more than most other kalim. Most other kalim touch a mess. They become a rish in the chumra. A metal kaili touches a mess, it becomes an avatoma. Actually, I take it back, rather. Sorry. A regular kaili touches a mess, it becomes an avatoma. A metal one becomes an aviatoma. Just like the mess itself. Cherub hareo kakolo. Just like the mess itself.
But it has to be a whole kaili mattress. It cannot be any part of the kaili.
Yeah, no, we mean a whole kaili.
If there's one part that's non-metal.
Well, then you have all kinds of, you have Mishnah, you have a whole bunch of Mishnayos in Kalim that talk about what's the main part of the Kali, is the wood serving the metal, or is the metal serving the wood, Anyway, so that's why, because it says Mizachar Ad Nekeva, that means it's not only people who are either male or female, which would be Rav Din, it's also teaching us about Kalim. So the question is, Ihochi, ki itami b'shav tumas lo b'shavu. Okay, fine. So we've accepted. So we can accept that then. So the pasuk is teaching us two dinim then. Number one, that it's not only people but also kalim. and but no, except for Clay Harris. And number two, that within people, it's only actual males or actual females, not chumtum androgynous. If they become tamei and enter the bismikdash, they don't bring a carbon. But now we still have to ask. If we're saying that ultimately we're learning it from the chol tamei lanafesh, then we should say that only applies if they became tamei mes. How do we know it also applies when they became tamei with other kinds of tumas? Chol tamei lanafesh means where they became tamei by a dead body. If, because that's what it means. Called tamei lanefesh means tamei by the soul of a person. As opposed to a sheriff. Yeah, I mean, a dead body of a person. In other words, the question is like this. We're saying, Rashi says we're actually referring back to what Rav said before. Rav had said that specifically when it comes to this tumor of loivan or oidim, I misstated. Rav is saying that when it comes to this tumor of loivan and oidim, of red or white discharges, then if the tumtum or androgynous has them, even though he had both of them, nevertheless, if they go into this mikdash, they're potter. But they're potter from the carbon because mizachar on the cave. But why are we excluding them only from that type of tumor? Rav is not saying, for example, that if a tumtum, let's say, touches a sheret or touches a dead body or whatever, that they shouldn't be high of a carbon for entering the azara. In that sense, they are just like a male or a female. Why is Rav limiting his din, mizachar ad nekeva, only to cases of discharges? The answer is, it should include others. On the contrary, if you're learning it from this mizachar ad nekeva, then you should say that no matter what tumma they became tummy with, you don't have to send them out of the azara. Whether it's a mess, whether a sheretz, whether an avela, whatever, any of the other tumma. Why is Rab saying that only when it comes to discharges, being a zava or a zava, are we saying that the tumtum are androgynous or potter if they entered the bis mikdash b'shevet? The answer is amakra mi zachar, because the pasuk uses the expression from a zachar, meaning mituma ha-pereshes min a zachar. So we're talking about regarding the tumma that comes from the zachar himself.
And by extension, in the keva.
Right. But in other words, therefore, it's only a tumma that comes out of their own body, namely ziva. Okay, so the question is, v'chol heich b'nau. Okay, fine. So that settles that then, so we've explained that. But now we have to ask more generally, v'chol heich adichpid mizachar ad mekeva l'mu'uti tumtum v'androgynous or da'asa. Are you telling me that whenever the Torah uses the word zachar and mekeva, it excludes the tumtum v'androgynous? What about v'hagabi erchin? What about the case of erchin that we learned back in Masechta Erchin? This tiv has zocher. The pasuk says that if you vow to the bismikdash the erech of a zocher, then you pay X amount. Because there we're not talking about discharges. But the point is the expression is v'haya erech ha zocher. Then the erech for a zocher is such and such, and the kever is such and such. The tanya and we learn in a brayso over there has zocher means v'loy tumtum v'androgynous. The word has zocher means as opposed to a tumtum v'androgynous. Tosfos says because we're learning from the hay of has zocher. You would think maybe that means, okay, so if you vowed the erech of a tumtum, so fine, we can't make you pay the erech of a zocher, which is higher, but you would think at least the lesser erech of a woman should apply. So if this tumtum, again, we learned in erechin, right? You have a table in parshas b'chol kodesh.
Right.
You have, let's say, for example, for a man between 20 and 60, the erech is 50 shkolim. Mm-hmm. For a woman between those ages, 30. So let's say you have a tumtum. Let's say we have it standing in front of us, a tumtum who's 40 years old, and we were to say, I pledge this tumtum's erech to the bismikdash. So we would say, okay, we can't make him pay 50 shekel because he might be a woman, but at least I should have to pay 30 because no matter what, either it's a man or a woman, and 30 is less than 50.
Because he's less than a man.
That's the point. Therefore, the prophet says the zocher because we're learning from hey, and im nekeva, and we're learning from the word im means zocher vade nekeva vandor. So it only applies to an act to a definite man, a definite woman. The loy tumtum v'androgynous. Now, what's the point? Time dechtiv ha zocher im nekeva. Only because you have that hey, and only because you have the word im, are we saying that we're excluding the tumtum v'androgynous? Homi zocher nekeva loy mamai. But implying that if the pasuk had just said v'hoya erchach zocher unekeva whatever, then we wouldn't know to exclude it from tumtum androgynous. According to Rav's rule, we should say just the fact that it says zocher unekeva is enough to exclude a tumtum androgynous. Because Rav, after all, used the, when we said mizocher ad v'keva, we said that we're using the mem to teach us about discharges. We're using the ad to teach us about kalim. So we're saying just zocher and the keva themselves exclude tzumtum andrimnus. But here we're saying we need a hey and an im. The answer is ha'um mebo le'chalik ben erech ish le'erech isha. The answer is that over there, the reason why it needs to say zocher, the reason why it needs to say the word zocher and nekeva is just to tell us that a zocher and nekeva have different erichim, l'chalik ben erich ish la'erich isha, to distinguish between the erich of a man and the erich of a woman. Because in other words, if the Torah hadn't used the word zocher and nekeva, you wouldn't know that it's 50 for a man and 30 for a woman, etc. So therefore, so there we can't be mamayit. We need the word zocher and nekeva, and it was like gufo, just for the basic concept that there's to differentiate between the different erichim. So therefore, we need the hey and we need the im to exclude the tumtum v'andrimnus. But no, but we can still accept Rav's definition. Okay, fine. We said in the Mishnah, yosem achutach oy masuras v'chola. We said if the baby comes out in pieces or if the baby comes out backwards, then we said once most of the body has come out, then the baby is considered. It means backwards, means a breach. Means to turn around. Almer of Elazar, afilu haroshi mah. So Rabbi Elazar tells us that is true even if the head is one of those pieces. In other words, forget about the masura for a moment. Let's say you have a baby that came out mechutach. Rabbi Elazar is saying, even if one of those pieces that came out is the head, we don't automatically say, well, the head came out, therefore the baby is considered born at that point, and you may tuma and you may tara begin from that point. No, because no, that's the point. We still say we need 51% of the body. So therefore, so the head came out, you still need enough other pieces to come out for a check. Okay.
But I'm getting when the head is attached to the whole body.
Well, right.
You say there's a leader with the head.
Right, right. But Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Rabbi Yochanan says, no, lo shanu ela she'ena roshi ma'an. By the mechutach, when we say that you need most of the body to have, most of the limbs to have come out, that's only if the head is not among them. Abel haroshi ma'an, but if the head is with them, harosh poter, then the head pater, he's using the word harosh poter, even if it's separated. Poter in the sense that, for example, if there's another baby afterwards, then he's not a bechor. On the side of here, it brings a different view, it's a harayu kiyol, the baby is considered born already. Either way, it amounts to the same thing. Rabbi Yochanan says, even if the head is separated, once it comes out, it's the baby is considered born. Okay, the Gemara says, lame a bit of shmuel coming for you. Should we have to say that Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan are arguing regarding Shmuel's din, whether they agree with it or not? The Amar Shmuel ain harosh poter b'nefalim. Shmuel says a din that if the head of a stillborn baby comes out, it's not considered, it doesn't pater the next baby from Bechorah. Meaning, Rashi describes like this. Let's say, for example, you had two babies in the womb. They're being born in the seventh month. Now, we learned yesterday that babies can develop on a seven-month track, and so you can have a baby that's fully formed at the end of 7 months. Suppose now you have that, we mentioned in connection with Yehuda and Chizkiah, the sons of Rabkiah, that they developed on two different tracks, and they ended up being born 3 months apart. So let's say in this case they didn't do that. Let's say they're both coming out at the same time. So let's say, for example, one of them is premature and his head comes out. Say they're both being born in the 7 months, but one of them is premature. He should have been born at the end of one of them is halacha is not considered premature because he's fully formed. Again, one of them is fully formed. He has fully premature would be if his hair and his nails are incomplete. Once the hair and the nails are complete, then
yeah, complete babies at 7 months.
Yeah, that's what we're saying when we say that they develop on the 7 month track. That's what we mean. Okay, so let's say, for example, Rashi says, let's say the head of the baby that is not going to survive, the one that is supposed to have been born 2 months later or 3 months later or whatever. Suppose that came out, then it retracted it back into the womb. Then the other baby that's fully formed came out. Shmuel is saying that we don't say that the head of the first one coming out makes it, and that now the second one is not a bechor anymore, that he's not peterechem. No, we don't do that. Because he's a natal, because the first one is effectively considered a stillbirth, because he's not going to live very long, because he's not fully formed. Therefore, the brother who comes out after him is the bechor as far as pidyon habet. Bar Shah talks about over here about what.
Not for
a nachla. No, for nachla doesn't matter. For nachla, either way, the one that doesn't survive is not going to be the bechor of the nachla anyway. It's not libo dava all of, as we learned before. The father is not going to feel so bad about a baby that was anyway stillborn in the next thing. So as far as nachla, definitely the second one is the nachla anyway. But we're saying even as far as pidyon habet. Okay, Marshall talks about over here what forces Rashi to say that we're talking gotcha in the seventh month. Why couldn't Rashi assume that we're also talking about we're in the ninth month? Whatever. Anyway, the point is that Shmuel is saying that the head of a nafel coming out is not considered a birth. So apparently, therefore, Rebbe Lazar therefore would disagree with that. Rebbe Lazar therefore would agree with that. Therefore, he says the head of this cut up baby coming out is not enough to be considered a birth. And Rabbi Yochanan would be agreeing. Rabbi Yochanan would be disagreeing with Shmuel and says no, even though it's a cut up baby and it's obviously not alive, nevertheless, the head coming out is still considered a birth. Okay, the Gemara says not necessarily because b'shalim the kula almalek maybe not necessarily because Shmuel is talking about where the baby is intact, it's premature and it's not going to survive or it's stillbirth or it's a stillbirth or whatever, but the body itself is intact, right? So then we could say that Shmuel would say that the head coming out doesn't make a difference. Ki pligi b'mechotach, they might only be arguing about the case where the baby is in pieces. Rabbi Lazar would say that when the baby is intact, then the head is considered significant, not like Shmuel says, that if it's a nafel, it's not. But if the baby is not intact, if it's cut up, then the head is not any more important than any other limb. Or Mar Sava, Mamachotach Nami Choshev, whereas Rabbi Yechanan would say that even if the baby is chopped up, then the head is still significant. So they would both be disagreeing with Shmuel. They would say that Shmuel was saying his din when the baby is intact. That ain't a rosh kodesh ben afalim. Both of them would be saying.
What would you say if the baby is not intact, Shmuel?
We don't know, but Shmuel. We don't know, but Shmuel is talking about a case where the baby is intact. Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yechanan would be saying we disagree with Shmuel's whole premise. When the baby is a nafel, the head coming out doesn't matter. And now you have a machlokas over here. What happens when the baby is chopped up? Whether the head has any significance. Okay. Lishnach, another version of how to say it. Time of the Yosem Chutach Misuras. We would say that Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yechanan are saying, why are we saying that? Why is the Mishnah telling us that only when most of the baby comes out is considered born? Only because it was cut up or because it came out backwards? Ha Ketikne Harosh Poter, implying that if the baby came out normally, then once the head comes out, it's considered born, which would mean Tavayu Leslahu de Shmuel, which would mean that both of them disagree with Shmuel. Drama Shmuel, Ein Harosh Poter Ben Afalim, because Shmuel says that if the baby is dead, then the head coming, even though it's intact, and even though it's being born head first, the head coming out doesn't make a difference. So therefore, so that's a different way of saying what we just said, that they'd both be disagreeing with Shmuel's premise. Now, thus far we've been saying that Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yechanan are both referring to our Mishnah. Now, there were other Chachamim, other Amiroyim, who learned this Machloikas of Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yechanan as a separate, independent Machloikas, nothing to do with our Mishnah. Which means, Rashi says, if we say it's referring to our Mishnah, then we're talking about the case where the baby came out in pieces. And maybe Rabbi Lazar would say that if the baby came out whole, then he would agree. Then he would agree that it's considered that once the head comes out, then it's considered born. But if we learn it as a separate machlokas, then they'd be arguing whether the baby is intact or whether it's not intact. And then indeed they would be arguing, do we accept Shmuel's din or not? Namely, if we learn it as an independent machlokas, Amar Rabbi Lazar ain harosh kareves on him. Rabbi Lazar says that the head is not considered like the majority of limbs. So just because the head came out, if it's a nafel, if it's a stillbirth or a non-viable baby, then Rabbi Lazar would say the head coming out doesn't mean anything, which would be the same way as which would be agreeing with Shmuel. Rabbi Yechanan Amar harosh kareves on him. Rabbi Yechanan would say that no, the head is considered like the majority of Eivarim. So even if it's a stillbirth, nevertheless, it's still considered born at that point, which would mean that he disagrees with Shmuel. But come quickly, give it to Shmuel. So then it comes out, if we learn it that way, it comes out that they're arguing, do we accept Shmuel's din or not? Rabbi Lazar accepts it, Rabbi Yechanan doesn't. So the Gemara says, Tanan, let's look at our Mishnah and see which of those opinions it can work according to. The Mishnah had said, Yosem Chutach Ay Masuras, if the baby comes out in pieces or backwards. We said, Mishin Yosem Rubay Hareu Kiyolod, we said, once most of the body comes out, then it's considered to be born already for all purposes in Halacha. So Midka'ama Masuras, but since we're mentioning the case where the baby came out chopped up or backwards, Mikal the Machutach Ketiknoi, apparently what we mean is if it came out chopped up means it was coming out head first. Because the pastors were talking two different cases, one where it was in pieces, the other one where it was intact but backwards. And we're saying only once most of it comes out is it considered born. That would be a contradiction on Rabbi Yechanan. Because according to Rabbi Yechanan, as soon as the head comes out, even though it's in pieces, It's already considered born.
He was saying it.
The answer is, Rabbi Yochanan can answer that the Mishnah is not talking about two different cases. It's one case where it was broken up and those pieces came out of order. So the question is, what do you mean by oikotani? What do you mean? The Mishnah said or, mechotach oi mesura. Aleph vav, which means or. The answer is, hachikama. Still, Rabbi Yochanan might understand the Mishnah to be yotze mechotach oi shalim, if the baby came out in pieces or it came out intact. But either way, the case is that it came out feet first. Only once most of it comes out is it considered born. But in other words, Rabbi Yechon would say that oi means that we're talking about cut up or intact. But either way, the mesoros is not a separate case, but rather a detail that refers to both of those possible cases. So Rabbi Yechon would say if the baby is being born head first, as soon as the head comes out, it's considered born. But if it's being born bleach, then regardless whether it's whole or whether it's not, then you need most of the body.
That's three different cases.
So, yes, that's three different cases, exactly. Right. Okay. I'm gonna pop a katanoi. So the papa says actually we can relate this to a machloit katanoim. A brice that says yotze mechutach al mesuras, if the baby comes out in pieces or backwards, mishi yotze rubay harayu ki yolod, once most of it comes out, it's considered already born. Hawk implying hawk etikna harayish poter, which would imply that if it came out normally head first, as soon as the head comes out, then the head makes it poter, the head makes it considered born already. Rabbi Yosi, mishi yotze rubay ketikna, and Rabbi Yosi says only once most of it comes out in the normal way. In other words, he would say that even when the baby is cut up, it needs to be that most of it came out in the normal direction. You know, even if it's a normal direction, because it's cut up, therefore you still need the majority of it, which is what Rabbi Lazar is saying, that the head is not any different than any other limb. So Rabbi Lazar would be going like Rabbi Yosi, and Rabbi Yochanan would be going like the Chachamim. Okay, we'll have to stop here for my review, and we'll finish that up tomorrow.
Thank you, Dr. Rabbi. Thank you.